General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
In Kenya, 60 miles from Nairobi, the capital, there is a town called Naivasha. There is one main street and an inn called The Bell at Naivasha, and near the town is a great lake. There are tilapia and black bass in the lake, and hippo. The farmers buy their provisions at the Dukas, or Indian-owned stores in the one street. Dogs sleep and scratch in the dust. Car salesmen from Nairobi fish for the tilapia and bass in the lake, and photograph the hippo. Naivasha is peaceful today. Eland and Thompson's gazelle graze 50 yards from the road. Naivasha is peaceful today, but one November morning, a decade ago, when the moon burned with a merciless ice fire, a man died near this town. A man we shall call John McGowan. His story, Shauri Yamungu. The Kikuyu tribe of Kenya say, Shauri Yamungu, it is God's will, when anything defeats them, or when something is beyond their comprehension. John McGowan became a Kikuyu. McGowan and his blood brother, a man we shall call Sean Harris, were pseudo-terrorists, or white Mau Mau. The pseudos, with blackened skins and disguised as forest gangsters, had finally broken the hard core of the rebel gangs by 1955. But a few remained, fanatics who were inured to hardship, unyielding, bound by a potent oath to hold out to the end. Harris and McGowan went on their last safari together, but their quarry did not have four legs.
Hello, Sue. You're going home?
Yes, to John's people.
Kericho?
Yes. Will you have some coffee? Ranjiko is bringing me some.
Yes, fine.
We'll have it out here. Wanjiko, kahawa kwa bwana. Sean, we got the message yesterday about this thing. John asked me to go to Kericho while it's on.
Yes.
I asked him not to go, Sean.
Sue, he has to.
I shan't go, Wanjiko. Sean, please don't go in against this gang. Please don't.
Why?
I've got a feeling something's terribly wrong somewhere. I can't explain.
John and me, we've come through a lot together.
That's not... right down, Simba, down.
Far worse from the looks of it than this gang. Sue, don't worry. This sounds stupid, I know, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine, I'm telling you.
Couldn't you send him on another job, Sean? Please... anything, as long as it's not Navasha.
How can I? We're both under orders.
But Navasha isn't your affair. You've both done your bit in your own division. Navasha's crawling with military.
That's not the point.
Surely to goodness they've got enough people there to fight their own battles.
You don't understand,
Sue. Please. You ought to know well enough. Have I ever been awkward about this sort of thing before?
No. No, as a matter of fact, you've been marvelous.
Is it wrong, then, for me to try and stop this feeling as I do?
You see... The local police, they haven't made any headway with these jokers. Well, we've got to go and do our stuff.
Pride. All right, Sean. But will you do one thing for me?
Of course.
I've got a letter here. Please give it to John.
The key to the terrorist position was their water supply. Thiga, one of the African pseudos, made himself a hide like the sort used in leopard hunting. All that night he watched the waterhole. He saw a variety of animals come to it. Zebra, wildebeest, Congoni, leopard, but nothing two-legged. In the early morning, Sean Harris joined Thiga in the hide.
Jambu one.
Jambu sana, Thiga. Nothing?
Avan. I ask myself what I would do if I were Mau Mau. What I would do if I wanted water, Bwana. Would I come in the night? No.
Why wouldn't you come for your Margie in the night, Thiga?
Because, Bwana, I would be found out. At night, my enemies would say, now he will come. No, Bwana, I would come in the sun when all the birds sings, and my enemies have gone to sleep.
Why?
Bwana.
Kwasa Babugani. Why should you think that your enemies would ever sleep?
But Bwana,
quiet.
Ngombe. Ningi sana.
Can you see anybody? Can you figure?
No. No. Hapana mimi mwana. Ndigi.
No. Look, there's a boy.
Ndiu.
Look. Tika. Darn that bird. See, Tika? See that man?
He's hiding from Toto.
Yeah. Yeah, the boy can't see him. Don't be here.
But what?
Shut up. What are you, a Mzee with a brain that's tired with too much Bombay? I mustn't shoot him. Do you want them to know we're here?
Aban. He comes for water, Bwana.
Yes. Yes, he's Mau Mau, right? Get down there, Thiga. Follow him.
Do.
Follow him, and Bwana Mugan, and I'll see you back at the Land Rover.
Here was the explanation for why members of the gang had never been seen at the waterhole. They had come with morning cover, and their tracks had been automatically covered up by those of the animals. The terrorist returned the way he had come, but this time with Thiga following him among the cattle. The sun was high now, the smell of the cattle overpowering. The dust was thick. It crept down Thiga's throat. It coated him, mixed with his sweat, until he became indistinguishable from the legs and the backs and the horns of the cattle. While the dust grew thicker, John McGowan, waiting in the Land Rover with Harris, was dreaming of double whiskies with ice.
Oh, the biggest in the world, Sean.
A barrel of the stuff, a barrel of an iceberg. Here's the gun.
Jambo.
How many, Thiga?
Mingi san.
How many?
Ishirini na sita.
26. What else, Thiga?
They live in tents, Bwana. Small tents under leswa bushes. Watu mingi, Bwana.
Yes. Bigger than we've tackled before, Sean. Fire in the middle, Thiga?
Ndio, Bwana. They sleep around the fire. We will go in. Sleep in with the Mau Mau.
Well, we could spend the night there, Sean. Sleep in the open space and fire at a given signal. Place our weapons strategically. None of them need escape. What have we got, Thiga?
Guns? Yeah.
Rifles?
Ndio.
Come on, Thiga. How many?
Sita. Tommy guns, one.
Yes, how many, Tommy?
Billy, Tatu.
Two or three Tommies. Mm. Rifles? It'll be tough, John.
We can do it. The terrain's no good for a straight attack.
Which is what the army would want of those.
Of course. Blast them.
Ralph will agree with us.
Yes, but the army's an overall command, Sean.
Wana!
Where the dickens? Out the places. Someone follow Thiga back. Thiga!
He's gone after the Nicky. Must have been Mama.
What else? Oh, that's torn it. Now,
wait. Wait.
Thiga! Bwana!
Did you,
No. Mama, kufa kabisa. Dead.
All right, John, let's go.
Come
on, John. We've got to go and see Ralph now. This is his pigeon.
All right, okay, Sean.
I'm sorry.
I don't think we're going to be allowed to do this thing our way. Do you?
They weren't allowed to do it their way. The area commander, Assistant Superintendent Keith Rolfe, although he fully agreed that pseudoing was the answer, was not in a position to give the go-ahead. The army was in charge. The army knew next to nothing about Mau Mau, but they were in command. Rolfe informed the military officer in charge, and a meeting was convened to discuss tactics. Despite their advice and protests, the three policemen were overruled. The plan chosen was for a straight army-style platoon attack on the hideout by 20 hand-picked British infantry armed with semi-automatic FM rifles, supported by Harris, McGowan and Rolfe. When Seeger heard the news, he shook his great head, looked at the blue distance where Mount Kenya, the abode of the Kikuyu deities, smiled sadly and whispered,
"Shauri, Yamungu."
The people of Nairobi knew nothing of the proposed raid. On the outlying farms, they went about their work, ate, drank, slept, and wondered when there would be an end to Mau Mau, and when Kenya would be theirs again. And whilst they lived their accustomed lives, and whilst men planned to raid the last of Mau Mau, there were men in London, 4,000 miles away, who were planning to take Kenya away forever. Men who were drawing up constitutions and proclamations and decrees that made all the fighting invalid, all the bloodshed meaningless. That evening, Harris and McGowan had a drink in the bar of the Bell Inn, Naivasha.
The more guns you have, the more danger it'll be for us.
An axiom in close combat attack.
Oh, well, that came out of the book, Sean. Look, three guns. Each man doesn't move from his position once the firing starts. Now, we place our bullets coolly, carefully. Coolly. I don't like it, Sean. In this business, there's going to be 23 guns. I'm not a bit happy about the whole thing.
Two kids. Big Kenya boys. 6 footers with 6 shooters on their hips. Nearly as long as them. Well, anyway, Bill says whiskey to George behind the counter, and bang! Wham! Just like that. Well, these two kids nearly jumped as high as Kilimanjaro. All their guns spun round. Nearly shot old Bill. Well, they jumpy. Bill went
laugh, eh? I thought I'd never start.
You want to go, John?
No, it's just that we could die tomorrow. So could those kids he was talking about. Who do they think we're doing this for? People like that. Have another one.
No, I won't, John. Thanks.
McGowan was surprised. Normally, he and Harris were tuned to the same wavelength. There was a community of tastes and outside interests. They both liked speed and jazz. They liked the same kind of food, people, clothes. McGowan couldn't remember a time when he ordered and Harris had not wanted to join him. Neither drank too much, and if they went into a bar and one was feeling like a particular drink, he would order two with the certainty that the other would want the same. But not tonight.
Jirogi, whiskey moja na barafu. Are you sure you weren't, Sean? Okay. Moja, Jirogi. Bwana Harris, Quisha.
I wonder what would happen if we refused point blank to go in on this.
I wonder. We can't really pull out, can we?
No. I don't suppose so.
In that case, all we can do is keep our fingers crossed. I suppose you saw Sue.
Yes. Yes, she was going up to Karicho.
I'm glad. I wasn't happy about her being left there on her own with the kids. Did she say anything else?
In Harris's hip pocket was a letter. A letter for John McGowan. Harris knew that it was the wife's last appeal to her husband not to go through with the Naivasha affair.
Did she say anything else, Sean?
Only that she was anxious.
Oh,
At 2:30 the following morning, November the 11th, 1955, a convoy of vehicles moved out of Naivasha. By the time the convoy reached Munyu, it was 3:00.
Put that light out.
See what we're up against? The army.
Right on, Sean.
Look, Keith, you know how we've worked before.
It's all right.
Look, there's nothing I can do. This is the job for the Tudors. I know that as well as you do. To meet.
I know, Keith.
Look, I'll take you to Scotland.
Scotland, what a lovely thought.
Captain Scotland. He's the army commander. Go easy, Sean. He's not your sort of bloke at all. In fact, well, save yourself.
There they are, Rolf. Handpicked, every one of them.
They're all, they're a bit young, aren't they?
Have they had any actual experience of this sort of work before?
Well, actually, no, but they're all excellent chaps, you know. Dash keen to get themselves blooded.
It was a cold but lovely night, with a sky full of stars that seemed on top of you. All around were the Laleshwa bushes like shimmering ghosts. The bushes appear to move. They get up and trot a few yards. You see it happen out of the corner of your eye, and then, as you turn quickly that way, the bush halts. Tiga led them to a donga, within a quarter of a mile of the Mau Mau hideout. It was still very early, so Rolf passed the word round to lie up where they were for the next hour and a half. Harris and McGowan lay down alongside one another up against the side of the donga.
Miles and miles of blooming Africa out there, boy.
I thought I was hearing things when Rolf said he'd take us to Scotland.
Dashed keen to get themselves blooded. What's the use of sending a national serviceman chartered accountant to fight the Mama? He should be at the Bioscope in Hackney Wick. If we got down there with them as suitors, we'd make it. We'd get the lot expert. Where might you cry, my lovely?
Wana.
Hello, Figa.
Wana. Please forgive me, but I do not bring my suitors in with these Johnny soldiers.
No, Thiga, that's not the intention, you know that. Your team is brought along in case the situation changes.
There are going to be so many Johnnies firing. The wrong men will be killed. You, Buanas, will be killed. You and Buana Magal. Go for Cabeza.
All right, Thiga, all right. Go on back now. Go on.
You, Buana.
Well, John, how do you feel about it?
You know, Sean, I've got a feeling that was our last whiskey together. I've just got that feeling. I don't think we're going to come out of this.
Oh, for pity's sake, John.
Harris was suddenly scared. The trouble with these army fellows is that they're just so keyed up.
The jackals seem to cry for comfort.
Look at them. They're so tense.
You can run now, Harris and McGowan. The officers and NCOs must have some idea of what the form is.
You don't believe that, Sean Harris. You don't believe that.
Run now. Africa is big. So big. John. John, I just remembered I've got a letter here for you.
Yes. Give him the letter now, Sean Harris. From?
Yes. From Sue.
If, after he reads it, he decides to pull out, you could support him to blazes with the rest. I can't read it now. Give it to me later.
Shall I hang on to it?
Yes, please.
The stars turned pale and it began to get light. When that happens, the dawn comes very quickly.
Come on, John.
They advanced about 20 yards. They saw tents. Suddenly, a terrorist stood up.
Oh,
place suddenly became alive. By now, the army were on their stomachs behind McGowan and Paris, blazing away as fast as they could loose off ammunition. Some of it was going very wild. The ground on either side of Harris was raked as though a giant had pushed a giant fork through it. The bush behind which he was taking cover was there 1 minute and gone the next. No one knew what was happening. There was no sign of McGowan. Death had reaped a mighty harvest. The scene was of carnage, smelling as it always did of blood and cordite. The dead were in heaps. Some of them were covered by collapsed tents. Their shelters had become their shrouds.
Where's John McGowan?
Who? McGowan? I'm afraid I...
Don't get out of my way!
McGowan lay near a fallen tree trunk. He was dead.
What are those men doing? Scotland. Nothing's to be touched. Tell them to get out. There'll be no souvenir hunting by your soldiers, Mr. Scotland.
Ah, look,
would you please send someone to fetch my pseudo team? John paid with his life for all the killing he's done. I got off scot-free.
One.
Seeger stopped as if he'd been shot. He bent down very slowly and examined McGowan's wounds.
Those bullets, they came from Johnny's. The Johnny shot him.
No, Seeger. No, look again. He was shot from the front, not behind. The Mau Mau fired back and he was here in the hideout.
Johnny.
You know he always rushed forward. It was like that.
Johnny, they killed McGowan.
No, Seeger. No, for heaven's sake, Seeger.
Seeger looked round, his eyes blazing. He raised his rifle and pushed a bullet into the magazine. The army stood lined up a few yards away, their rifles empty.
Johnny's.
Three of the others who were with Seeger pushed a cartridge into the breech. The army stood watching, horribly fascinated. Harris dare not move. He knew that if he attempted to intervene, Seeger would shoot him first.
Seeger, what good will it do? It won't bring him back. It won't bring him back, Seeger.
Slowly, Seeger lowered his gun.
Sorry, Yamungo Bwana.
On October the 8th, 1956, there was a notice in the East African Standard. It read, "A posthumous award of the Queen's Police Medal for gallantry was made by the governor to Mrs. McGowan." But left unanswered forever is the question, whose bullets killed John McGowan?
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushbelt. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.